DJ Cox. Thanks for joining me on California Woman 411 right here on KPTR 1450 AM. And I have got another great show with some amazing guests lined up. So grab a cup of coffee and kick back with me this morning while we discuss some things that will inform, entertain, and maybe just educate a little. It's been a really interesting week. One of the things that I frequently say is that I am never bored. There is always something intriguing and educational or just downright funny going on. I recently reconnected with one of my best friends from high school. She had been so, really, just one of those people that was really important in my life. But we live in different states and lead very different lives and just had lost touch over the years since we graduated. But she is one of those women that is certainly a role model for me. She's brilliant and she juggles a career and a husband and a child. And I am just so excited to have her back in my life. But she sent me this email this week and it made me smile and think. And it was something that I wanted to share. In an evening class at Stanford University, the last lecture was on the mind-body connection, the relationship between stress and disease. The speaker, who was the head of psychiatry at Stanford, said, among other things, the best things that a man can do for his health is to be married to a woman. Whereas for a woman, one of the best things she could do for her health was to nurture her relationships with her girlfriends. Now, at first, everyone laughed, but he was serious. Women connect with each other differently and provide support systems that help each other to deal with stress and difficult life experiences. Girlfriend time helps us to create more serotonin, a neurotransmitter that helps to combat depression and can create general feelings of well-being. And I think most of us know that's true. I mean, regardless of who we marry or develop intimate relationships with, we love time with our friends, and we need other women in our lives as role models and inspiration. Now, I was listening to an engineer by the name of Natalie Panic. She's a systems engineer at MDA Space Missions, a rocket scientist. And she was talking about female empowerment, especially in science and technology and engineering. And she said her dream was to inspire more women into challenging themselves and taking risks to enroll themselves in science and engineering fields. You know, women are 3 times less likely to take a risk than a man. But risk is a key part of innovation. We need to see other women breaking stereotypes so that women can be encouraged to push boundaries. You know, I hear so frequently from professional women who would love to see more women in their fields. Very few women really want to be the only woman in a predominantly male environment. More female role models need to be at the forefront, you know, in the media and across the spectrum of occupations. Women need to see themselves reflected in roles that are traditionally seen as male. So many times it doesn't occur to us that we can be something or accomplish something until we see role models who lead the way. And women need to see more women who inspire us and remind us that we have options. And we can make things happen if we believe in ourselves. Now, you know, I'm not here to be a motivational speaker. In my next breath, I could be ranting about the hypocrisy of Ted Cruz reading Green Eggs and Ham. But gender parity and looking at how women are typecast in our culture is vital. You know, a new Yale study of researchers concluded that science professors at American universities widely regard female undergraduates as less competent than male students with the same accomplishments and skills. And as a result, the report found that the professors are less likely to offer the women mentoring or a job. And even if they were willing to offer a job, the salary was at a lower rate. We all have unconscious stereotypes, and unfortunately, women are frequently typecast as less intelligent or less competent. And that's why we need other women as mentors. You know, Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, recently wrote an amazing book called Lean In, and I've just moved it to the top of my reading list. She says that when men accomplish something, they attribute the success to themselves. But when they accomplish something, they attribute their success to others. We have to teach our daughters that they can do anything that our sons can do. One of the challenges for women, Ms. Sandberg indicates, is that our partners are not yet partners. In order to get more women to sit at the boardroom tables, we have to get more women to sit. We have to get more men to sit at the kitchen tables. And she advises women to, you know, date whoever you want, have fun, go out with the bad boys. But when it comes time to choose a partner, choose someone who's going to be excited for your career and your ambitions. I read an article this week on economic statecraft. The State Department says economic statecraft means harnessing global economic forces to advance Americans' foreign policy and employing the tools of foreign policy to shore up our economic strength. Now, this is probably not a topic of conversation around most homes, but you know what? This really deeply impacts women. Because any sensible economic policy begins at home, which steps including the creation of role models. Janet Yellen was most likely to be the first woman ever appointed to head up the Federal Reserve. What an amazing role model for women and girls. We as Americans want to believe that we're world leaders. Then we have to lead by example. It only makes economic sense in our country to educate and provide opportunities to all citizens, including women. I mentioned last week a New Hampshire Republican who claimed that radical gun violence was happening was the fault of women in the workforce taking jobs away from men. An insane philosophy, yes. But unfortunately, it's one that has been around since the end of World War II, when women were forced out of their jobs and back into the kitchen because those jobs belonged to men. Women don't take jobs from men. With the right kind of support, education, and role modeling, women can make great economic contributions, not only through employment with established companies, but through founding their own businesses and job creation. My first guest this morning is just such a woman. And I'll be right back with her.
It's my life, and I want the world to know. I'm living a dream just meant for me. Roll out the red carpet and treat me like a queen.
Hi, this is DJ Cox, and you're listening to California Woman 411 on KPTR 1450 AM. And now I'm going to introduce you to a woman who I believe to be an incredible inspiration and role model for so many women, Denise Wilson. And she is the president and CEO of Desert Jet, which is ranked one of the nation's fastest-growing jet charter companies for the third year in a row. She's a pilot, oh my God, with more than 7,000 hours of flight experience. And though women comprise only 10% of the top CEOs in the Inc. 500, Denise was named one of 2012's top 10 women CEOs. I am beyond impressed. Denise, thank you so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much and thank you for the great introduction.
Well, I would imagine that list is fairly short, that your list of accomplishments would probably take us a couple hours to get through. But I really appreciate you being here. I had been looking online at women and, you know, who I thought to be role models and inspiration, and I came across your name and your business and your accomplishments, and I thought, oh my God, I want to talk to this woman. She's just incredible. So
well, thank you.
If you wouldn't mind just sharing a little bit about how you got started. First of all, how did you become a pilot? Because I know that, 6% of the licensed pilots in the country are women?
Yeah, that's the latest statistic that the FAA has out there. I became interested in aviation initially from my mom. My mom was an engineer back in the 70s and 80s, one of the few female engineers back at the time.
See, you had a great role model. That's wonderful.
Yeah, and so she was a subcontractor for Boeing at the time. There were a lot of government contracts and such for building aircraft, and so she would take me on some of her business trips up to Seattle, and I would spend my free time while she was at work up at the Air and Space Museum in Seattle, and that was really my first exposure to aircraft. I think also when I was in high school, Microsoft Flight Simulator came out for the first time. And so we were all, you know, learning how to fly airplanes on computers back in the late 80s, which was, a pretty cool thing to do with computers at the time.
Sure.
Back then. And so I actually, on my 18th birthday, what I wanted for my 18th birthday was I wanted to actually go in an airplane and fly an airplane. And that's pretty much though where my mom's support stopped. She was fine with me being interested in aviation. She said, no, you're not going to go in an airplane. So I figured, you know, I'm 18.
The mother instincts kicked in, did they?
Yeah, yeah. I figured I'm 18, I'm legal. So I went on my 18th birthday, actually, to a local airport, and I got a sightseeing flight. Just went around. This was over in the Inland Empire. Just flew around my school and my house and came back to land. And, you know, it was actually a missed opportunity for me because the sightseeing flight really consisted of, you know, I had an instructor, a male instructor, who just pretty much said, you just sit over there and don't touch anything. And he just gave me a sightseeing flight. And I didn't realize until about 10 years later when I met a very, very good CFI, and he said to me, you know, that's not how your first flight lesson should have gone. Let me take you up. And he took me up, and he gave me the controls the very first time. I did the takeoff. I flew around the pattern. I did the first landing. And I realized, you know, wow, this is a great instructor. But also I realized I can do this.
Right.
And so that's really when I got hooked into aviation, about my late 20s.
That's phenomenal to me. I mean, one of the things that I want to really look at, well, one of the things I'm talking about with this show, but in addition to my life, is I love looking for role models. And I think that women need more role models, you know, because you've heard the saying, if you can't see it, you can't be it.
Exactly. That's
exactly
it.
And I think that so many women don't see options in their lives. They don't see possibilities. And it's only through role models and seeing women in positions such as yours, you know, that women get the idea that, hey, I could do that. I could be a pilot, or I could go start this huge company.
I agree with you 100%. I do agree about that with role models. And, you know, I think there's also a really core difference between women and men, though, as well, is if you ask a man typically, can you do this? They'll say yes, and then they'll just figure out how to do it. And I think as women, a lot of times we have our own internal voices that give us reasons why we can't do something.
Absolutely.
And I think for those of us women who have figured out that, if we can actually say, you know, I can do it, and then we just figure out how to do it later, we end up being more successful.
You know, I've actually said that very thing before. I'm a playwright, and the very first time I ever had a play produced, I had written a one act that was a part of a festival, and the producer of the festival came to me and said, I love your one act. Can you make it into a full-length play? I want to produce it. I had never written a full-length play in my life. I took a deep breath and said, sure.
Exactly.
Sure I can. I can write a full-length play, and then I went home and panicked, but I did that in private.
Exactly.
So I absolutely agree with you. You have to be willing to say, yes, I can do that. And I think that for women, sometimes that's a bigger challenge. Well, let's talk about your company a little bit. Now, how long were you a pilot? What did you do in that process? Sure. And then how did you start your company?
Well, I originally started out as a pilot just as a hobby, really. And then after a few years, I just really couldn't think of doing anything else. So I changed careers and became a pilot full-time. And I worked for a few airlines, American Eagle, U.S. Airways Express in the Northeast. That's actually where I worked at 9/11. And then I worked for Aloha Airlines out in Hawaii.
Oh, sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then they folded and didn't do so well. And as most pilots, I'd say, in the last 10 years have done, I probably floated back and forth between private aviation, business aviation using business jets, and the airlines. And I made a solid commitment to be finished with the airlines after Aloha folded.
Uh-huh.
And I just saw more opportunity in the business aviation side of...
For those of us that are not as in sync with that,
sure.
What is business aviation? What does that mean?
Well, basically, business aviation is using private aircraft in a business use. And we have a lot of businesses and private individuals in the whole country, in the whole world, actually, that use aircraft to further their business needs.
Okay.
Whether it's bringing clients to their factories in order to be able to see what's happening, whether they're flying workers to remote sites, whether it's to go to various sites across the country and furtherance of acquisitions for your company. There's all sorts of reasons why people use private aviation, but mainly it's because of the convenience and the increase in productivity. We have a lot of businesses that fly with us just because they have to be there now.
Right.
And they can't go on an airliner and go through three different hubs trying to get to where they're ultimately going.
Right.
It would just take too long. So, and we have a lot of businesses that want to take an entire intact team somewhere. So if they fly with us, they can work en route and not worry about having their discussions overheard by other people on the airplane that might be a competitor or
sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
And then just really when you have to go, if there's an emergency and you have to go right now. So there's a lot of reasons why people use business aviation, basically. It's any type of aircraft that's basically not an airliner.
Okay. And how did it come about that you decided to start your own company? I mean, that's not the norm. That's
craziness.
Not...
okay. Insanity. No, I actually really enjoy it. I initially did it really because I had been working for various companies over the years and various private individuals over the years where my success was really tied to how well that company did.
Okay.
And I really had no control over that. So, for example, Aloha Airlines decided they were going to fold.
Right.
I have no control over that, and my job's gone. I work for a private individual, and if he runs out of money and can't afford his aircraft anymore, I have no control over that. So I really wanted to enjoy being a pilot and enjoying that career but have some stability. So my initial business plan was, rather than me working for private individuals or private companies that own airplanes, I would manage multiple aircraft from a wide variety of private individuals, companies, corporations, and then those planes could come and go, but I would still always have a flying job. It was a very simplistic way of thinking when I first started the company.
Okay.
And as I got into it, though, I realized that's really not, the reason why you'd start a company, although my personal reasons were the impetus. As I got into it, I realized...
Well, I think everybody has their own personal reasons, what motivates them. Yeah.
That's true. But as I got into it, I realized, there's actually a big demand for private aviation travel by people that don't want to own a jet themselves. They want to have the benefits of it, but they don't want to own the whole airplane.
Right.
And so it actually worked out to be a very good business plan for us.
I can imagine that would be somewhat cost prohibitive to own a plane for businesses.
Yes, it can be, unless you're flying the aircraft, three or four times a week where you can really justify having that asset. It's
right.
When that asset's not being utilized that it costs you the most amount of money.
Okay.
And so that's actually the other part of our business plan. We help companies that have these assets, if they're not being used all the time, when they're idle, basically we take them and we put them in our charter service, and that helps the companies offset their expenses at a time when they wouldn't be using the aircraft anyway.
Wow. So does your company actually own some planes and then utilize some planes from other companies?
We actually don't own any of the aircraft.
Okay.
We either lease or manage other individuals' aircraft for them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. I just find this fascinating. I find the whole idea I love to see women in professions that you don't traditionally see them in, because I find that just to be so inspirational. And especially women who have the fortitude, and the courage to start businesses and to take what they're good at and to make something really, really productive out of it, which obviously you've done. Well, let me ask you, what has been your experience in working with other women in this field? Have you come across very many other women
in aviation? Yeah, there's one other woman up in Oregon that owns her own charter company. And I really wish I could spend more time with her and share stories with her, but I've only spoken to her over the phone once. As far as I know, there are no other women in the United States that have started their own charter company.
Wow. Have you interacted with a lot of other women pilots?
Yes, that I have. We actually have four female pilots at my company. So half of our pilots.
That's great.
Almost half. Oh, they're all four of them are captains with my company. So it's been, personally important to me to give those opportunities to women. So the things I've noticed, that I have similar stories from all of them from their previous employment situations, and then that is that they were kept to the side and not really promoted or given the opportunities to excel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've really enjoyed bringing them in and probably giving them more responsibility than they really want, but they're really growing, and they're learning so much more than they've ever learned in their careers in the past. So that's been really important and rewarding to me to do that for them.
Well, and that just makes the point, and I keep emphasizing this, the importance of having women role models, and mentors, because I think that, I've talked to a lot of professional women who are the only woman in their office or their business, and it's like, women don't really want to be the only woman in an all-male environment on a regular, consistent basis.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's fine. They don't think about it. They're just doing their job. But frequently, they really do want to have other women around.
It's like, well, you know, there's different communication styles. And it's been really great for us to have this great mix of male and female pilots and male and it's just the whole company, a good mixture, because everyone does communicate differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been really good for us, our growth as a company, to have that.
Well, it is. I think that it's, and I'm big on gender parity, you know, in any profession. I think that, and that's one of the reasons that I was motivated to start the show, you know, because I really am a strong advocate for gender parity in across the spectrum of professions. And I think that in order to do that, we have to bring awareness, you know, and education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that there's a lack of gender parity because, oh, nobody wants women to get ahead.
No, not at all.
I think we just, most of the time, don't realize how low the percentages are in most fields for women. You know, I was blown away when I found out that only 6% of licensed pilots were female.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at most professions, 20% max is the limit for most women in most top professions. And I always go off on my tangent about women in theater and women in film because 20% of the writers, you know, that's what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Right. How would you say that being a woman has affected you in your career?
You know, I've been fortunate. I've never had, well, I've had a couple of, I've never had anything really hold me back. You know, I've had some sexist things here happen there and there, but they've actually just been funny more than anything else. Like, you know, one time, interviewed for a job, and the captain that was interviewing me actually said he had to ask his wife's permission before he could hire a female co-pilot. But, but I got the job anyway, so it didn't really hold me back. And then I had another airline actually ask me, what did my husband think about me taking this job, and then was I planning on having children, as if that was going to...
Which is a completely illegal question to ask.
Exactly. So they've just been funny, though. So I've been actually very lucky. I've never had my gender hold me back in any way. I would have thought that starting the private jet charter company, you know, there might have been issues there. But actually, I think it's really helped me in a lot of ways because I think, you know, my emphasis on my customer, the customer service aspect, and I think more in the human one-on-one relationship,
sure,
I think has really helped our business more than, you know, me focusing just on the flying aspect of the company. And so I've been lucky; it really hasn't negatively affected us.
That's crazy. And how are you from Palm Springs? How did you?
No, actually, I moved out here in about 2006 from the Inland Empire.
Okay. And what motivated you to move out to Palm Springs?
I moved out here for a flying job.
Okay.
Private individual here in the desert bought a jet and asked me to come out here and fly it for him and manage it for him.
Oh, and so this is where you decided to settle and
yeah,
open
love
your business.
The area. Yeah, love the air. It's beautiful. It's a constant feeling that you're in a resort community, and everyone that's here wants to be here because they love the weather and they love the area. So,
yeah, I find that too. I lived in Los Angeles for the past 100 years, and I just this past year, I've been going back and forth between the two, and just this past year decided to be here, make this my home base, even though I still go to L.A. a lot. Because I always found myself when I was coming down 111, that feeling of,
Just, I knew you were going to say that. Just the peacefulness. I understand completely.
It was like when you get on 111 coming into Palm Springs, you just like feel yourself physically relax here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I completely get that. Well, let me ask you something. In addition to running this major company and being such a successful businesswoman, what are the other interests that you have in your life, and what else do you do in your spare time?
Spare time, boy.
I know I use that term loosely, but
hopefully my husband's not listening to this because he would be laughing right now. Spare time. You know, I have to admit I don't have any spare time. So, you know, I do like to travel though.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of traveling. You know, we've been to the Maldives a couple times in the last couple years, Ireland, Australia. So. I know it sounds crazy, but even though I'm flying all the time with my career, I do like to travel. So we do a lot of traveling. And I'd say that's pretty much what I do is I run the business and I travel.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I used to be much more well-rounded. I was a professional oboist before becoming a pilot. So, unfortunately,
now that's a very diverse thing.
It is, but unfortunately, the oboe and flying don't mix. So, unfortunately, that had to fall to the wayside.
Yeah, I can see that being very diverse as far as interest goes. Yeah.
If you play for an orchestra, they want you to commit for the next year to all of these rehearsal dates and concerts. And as a pilot, you don't know where you're going or when you're going, when you're coming back. So.
Well, let me ask you this. If you were going to advise other women on becoming pilots or starting their own business, one or the other, what would be some of the pointers that you would want to give them?
You know, I think we all have internal voices that tell us why we can't do things. And I think women maybe tend to listen to those voices more than men do.
Mm-hmm.
I would say look around, and there's so many people, men and women, that have accomplished so many amazing things. Just do it. Don't listen to the voices. Just go try it. You know, there's so many women I meet on a regular basis when I tell them I'm a pilot. They say, oh, I've always wanted to go do that. And my first answer is, okay, here's the phone number of a flight school in Palm Springs. Just go take a demo lesson and go try it,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, it's just basically just do it and don't look back.
Do you think that women are more inclined to hesitate to pursue their interest than men may be?
I do. I've seen that. And, you know, it might be healthier. Had I done that, maybe I wouldn't be working, 60-hour, 70-hour weeks. But, no, I'm kidding. I do think... we do have those voices that tend to hold us back. There's even things now, things I would like to do with my business that are some pretty risky moves that I'm even contending with. Wow, do I really want to put us at that much risk to do this, or do I just want to jump in feet first and do it?
So. Well, and, you know, I read something recently that said that women are 3 times less likely to take risk than men are.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that that's an important thing to be conscious about, you know, because you have to take risk. Yeah. You don't get ahead if you don't take those risks.
Exactly.
And we're going to wrap this up here in a minute, but, you know, I recently moved to the top of my reading list, a book by Sheryl Sandberg, Lean
Love
In.
I bought it for all of my women. At
yes, I am just getting into that. So I want to thank you, Denise, so much for being here. I can't even begin to thank you. I'm so impressed with all that you do and what you offer, you know, as a role model and inspiration to other women and to men, to people in general, but just because of all that you've accomplished. And you are living proof. Just listen to that voice. Do it. Just do it. Thank you, Denise, so much for being here.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay, and stay tuned. We'll be right back. And this is DJ Cox, and I've been talking to Denise Wilson on KPTR, 1450 AM, California Woman 411.
It's my life, and I want the world to know.
Hi, this is DJ Cox, and you're listening to California Woman 411 right here on KPTR, 1450 AM. And I am in the studio with Tricia Daniels and Sarah Bryant from the Susan G. Komen Foundation. And they're joining me today to talk about the upcoming event, Sleepin' for the Cure, and women and breast cancer and all of that really important stuff. So welcome. Thank you so much for being here, both of you.
Well, thank you,
DJ.
Thanks.
So let's start out with talking about this event that's coming up. Tell me a little bit about what that involves.
This is the third annual Sleepin' for the Cure Coachella Valley. It's a grease pink party. And what it is, DJ, is it's a sleepover at the Esmeralda Hotel. We have a pajama party on Friday night, October 4th, and then on the 5th, Saturday, we have a fashion show.
That sounds amazing.
It is actually fantastic. It is the most fun ever.
And the purpose is?
To raise awareness for breast cancer.
Okay.
Susan G. Komen.
Great. Well, let's talk about Susan G. Komen for a minute.
Okay.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about the history and the background in Susan G. Komen and how that came about?
Okay, so Susan G. Komen was founded in 1982 by Nancy Brinker when her sister Susie passed away of breast cancer.
Okay.
Before she passed away, she asked Nancy to do everything in her power to end breast cancer forever. She was leaving behind 2 small children and her spouse, and she didn't want other women to have to go through what she did and to leave behind her family and for them to have to go through the suffering as well. So after her passing, her sister founded the organization Over the last 30 years, we've become the largest organization in the world in regards to breast cancer. We've given over $2.2 billion back towards research and community health programs, mammograms, things like that, treatment support. In the Inland Empire, we've been here pretty much, we were founded in 1996 and held our first Race for the Cure in 1999. This is our 15th annual Race for the Cures this year. We've given back nearly $6 million to our local community, just Riverside and San Bernardino counties, in the last 15 years.
You've done some incredible work.
Yes.
I mean, just amazing. You know, I think that breast cancer obviously is an important issue for women. I mean, I don't know anybody that's not aware of that or hasn't been affected by that. You know, we all have friends, family that has been affected by breast cancer. And from what I understand, it's only the second largest killer for women next to lung cancer. Is that
right.
correct? Yeah. Could you, and I'm a big stat person. I like to know statistics on things. Would you mind giving some statistics? Do you have that information?
I can give you a little bit what type of data you're looking in regards to breast cancer.
Yeah, in regards to breast cancer.
Who to make this, kind of come to life, 1 in 8 women will develop breast cancer in her lifetime. That's pretty staggering. Whereas for men, it's quite a bit less. It's about 1%.
I don't think it's perceived as being a major cause of
concern for men.
Concern for men.
No. But we do have to acknowledge the fact that men can develop breast cancer. For women, though, we anticipate, I believe it's over 232,000 cases, new cases of invasive breast cancer in the United States this year alone. In the Inland Empire, we anticipate, I have that with me. More than 2,000 new cases just in the Inland Empire region, so San Bernardino and Riverside counties. That's pretty staggering.
That's mind-blowing. You know, I don't think that we stop to realize, even though most of us know someone who's been affected by this, I don't think we stop to realize how staggering the statistics are and how much they impact us.
Mm-hmm.
And what random disease it is.
It is. You know, we don't know what causes breast cancer. There are, risk factors that increase your risk for developing breast cancer.
And what are those? What are the risk factors?
Risk factors include, one is being a woman and getting older. Those are two risk factors you cannot change, unfortunately.
Right.
Others is, just maintaining, having a healthy lifestyle. If you don't have those healthy lifestyle factors, you really increase your risk for developing breast cancer. Alcohol intake, your weight, healthy eating, where are you on that scale
mm-hmm.
of things can really make an impact on your health, not just for breast health, but for many
sure,
other factors.
Of course. With breast cancer, what do you think are some of the things that women should, obviously exams, obviously, getting regular checkups and self-exams and all of that. But what do you think are some of the things that they should be aware of in their lives when we're talking about breast cancer?
Well, Komen, we talk about breast self-awareness.
Okay.
And it's a very general message that we present to the community, but it's also very specific in a lot of ways. One is that we want everyone to realize that you are an individual and that not everyone's experience with things is going to be the same across the spectrum. So you really need to be, self-aware. So one is knowing your risk. Know what your family history is. Talk to your doctor about your personal risk for developing
breast cancer. So family history does impact it.
It can, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Although I do need to tell you that only about 5 to 10% of people who develop breast cancer is it a family history related breast cancer development.
Really? Only 5 to 10%?
Only 5 to 10%. And that's right there. People are so shocked when they hear that because,
I'm very shocked.
In the community all the time I hear people say, well, I don't have a family history. My mom doesn't have it. No one in my family has had breast cancer. But the truth of the matter is, 85 to 90% of people who develop it do not have a family history.
See, I didn't know that. I had always thought that family history really played a much larger part in that.
It plays a role. It's kind of difficult to explain in regards to when we talked about, knowing your family history and talking about that. There are other cancers that can be a risk factor for developing breast cancer. Just because you have a risk factor doesn't mean you're actually going to get breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
It just increases your risk.
Right. Okay.
Wow. Well, let's get back to, I just wanted to switch back over to talking about this event that's coming up, because I know that, first of all, I have to ask you a question, because this is a question that always comes to mind, you know, that I get asked, or that I have had a million conversations about with Susan G. Komen, and that was, you know, what happened with Planned Parenthood? And I know that you have a new president on board. She came on board this month, and I just want to know, you know, how that was resolved and where things are with Planned Parenthood.
So things have been resolved with the Planned Parenthood. Back in, what is it, 2012, mm-hmm. excuse me, it was 2012, mm-hmm. Komen revised our granting guidelines, and which, again, made Planned Parenthood eligible to apply for funding again.
Right.
I have to state, Planned Parenthood was never defunded. Komen never took away dollars away from them. So we want to make that clear to the community that we would never walk away from the women and their families. You know, our priority is to save lives and end breast cancer forever. And in communities where there are limited breast health services, it doesn't matter which provider you get your breast health services from. It matters that you have them available to you. And so we want to stay committed to our mission, you know, no matter what.
I think that's very admirable. And thank you for clearing that up a little bit, because I think in this day and age when women's health services are definitely under assault from many, many sources, it's important to know, you know, that there are certain foundations that are absolutely placing women as a priority. And I think it's important for everyone to understand that Susan G. Komen is one of those foundations.
We are. We, you know, our priority is to make sure that women have the breast health services they need. That's what we do.
Right.
And, you know, we do that through our community grants program. We do it through our education and our outreach. There's so many, you know, through our advocacy efforts, you know, and research, of course. But that's our goal. And we're going to make sure that we stay committed to that.
Excellent. I love hearing that. All right. So getting back to the Sleep In for the Cure. This is, what, the third year?
This is third annual.
Okay.
It's our third year. And I just want to talk a little bit about what it all entails. Every year we do a theme for the sleepover, for Sleep In for the Cure. This year is Grease, from the movie Grease.
Oh, I love Grease.
So it's a real 50s, you know, pink ladies. Frenchie, who was the redhead that flunked out of beauty school. So we have a lot of different themes, a lot of different theme rooms going on for the pajama party. But it is October 4th and 5th at the Renaissance Esmeralda in Indian Wells.
Okay.
And it includes your pajama party, which is Friday night from 7 to 9:30. There's drinks, food. We have several different rooms. We have a spa and hair and makeup rooms. You can go in, get pampered.
So do people show up in their pajamas?
Everyone, yeah. You can. It's pajamas
you walk around
are required. And you walk around the hotel. But all of this is $100.
Uh-huh.
Includes your night stay at the Esmeralda, your pajama party, which includes the fun and games and spa services, as well as food and drinks. Crater Lake Vodka is
That's
one of our sponsors.
Deal.
Crater yeah. Lake will be there, and we always have a signature pink drink, of course. $100 a person, and you stay the night.
Oh, and don't forget the pink pajama contest.
Oh, yep, we
for
do.
Friday night.
We have Friday night pink pajama contest.
What does that entail? Like,
you
anybody wearing pink
crazy,
pajamas?
You wear a pink wig. You just go all out. You could be triplets. You could be twins. You could be sexy. You could be comfy and cozy. Wear your furry slippers or your pajamas with the feet built into them.
Oh, I love that.
And scuff around. I don't know anywhere else you can go and wear your pajamas around a really nice hotel.
Yeah.
Out in public and not just in your room.
Right.
And great prizes, you know, as well, you know, for the pajama winners, which is really amazing. Last year, actually, Trisha was one of the winners of the pink pajama contest. She was a
Congratulations.
Triplet.
Congratulations.
I have two girlfriends that come from Santa Cruz and fly down just for this event.
From Santa Cruz? I
from
love Santa
Cruz.
Cruz. That's a commute.
They come. And they come. This is the second time. This is the second year I've been involved with Sleep In. So we also have a fashion show that's put on by Carol Dean Ross of Resale Therapy. It's called the Pink Ladies Fashion Show, of course. Men are welcome at this event. It is a women's only for the night before for the pajama party.
Okay.
A lot of ladies who attend our pajama party could be going through treatment, so we want them to feel comfortable
yeah.
in their pajamas. And you know what? If they don't want to wear a wig, they don't have to.
Sure.
But that, you know, they can just be very comfortable and relaxed. I bring my girlfriends. Some people attend with their moms or their sisters or cousins, girlfriends. I mean, it's a blast.
Well, my sister had breast cancer. So I,
oh, really?
Yes, and my aunt. So I do have a family history.
I do as well, DJ.
For myself. So I'm very, very empathetic to anything that supports this cause. So I'm so excited to hear about this event. And I'd like to know, like, how is this inspired? What inspired the sleep-in with...
Well, you know, so the Coleman Inland Empire Fellow, we have an office in Temecula and an office in Rancho Mirage. Okay. And we have our annual Race for the Cure, but our Race for the Cure is held in Temecula. And what we found is that, you know...
Which is not close to here.
No. I know, I used to live there.
I've been to Temecula. It's a drive.
So we decided, you know, that we needed to have something in the Coachella Valley for the community here.
Sure.
And something that would suit this type of community. And it's a resort community.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people don't want to drive all the way to Temecula at 3 in the morning to go to the Race for the Cure, or 4 in the morning, whatever time they need to leave. So we wanted to do something for the women in this community. You know, all of our funds, of course, 75% of our dollars that we raise go back to the local community, and the remaining 25% goes towards breast cancer research programs. But that's kind of how the sleep-in for the cure, our motto or our slogan kind of is if you can't make it, you know, hit the snooze button.
Sure.
You know, sleep-in for the cure. And you can support Komen and breast cancer awareness and activities and the community by attending this event.
I love it. And tell me, how did you two get involved? How did you? You're a volunteer, right, Tricia?
I am a volunteer.
Okay, and
I'm on the committee.
How did you decide to volunteer for?
I lost my mom 8 years ago to breast cancer,
okay.
And like most of us, she was my everything. And I just vowed to always. I just wanted to be involved in the awareness and help.
It rocks your world. I've lost my mother.
Help
as well,
to build the awareness of breast cancer and. I mean, I constantly am reminding family and friends, don't forget to get your mammogram. I usually send a card out every October, reminding everyone. And so, because there are a lot of women who do put off getting mammograms. I've been actually getting mammograms since I was 35 because of my family history and the severity of it. I liked those statistics. I can't say it. Statistics. it's not always, it's lower percent for family history. So that actually.
Yeah, that still blows my mind.
That actually does. And I'm grateful for that. But I just got involved because I've done the Race for the Cure, which I love. I do every year over in Temecula. I have done the Susan G. Komen 3-day, walking 60 miles in 3 days, which was very inspiring. What a wonderful experience. But my heart is right here with this Grease Pink Party and the Sleep In for the Cure. I can't think of a better fun way to support breast cancer awareness in Susan G. Komen by getting to sleep in a beautiful hotel, getting to be in a fashion show, having food and drinks, getting a little pampered by the spa, and wearing my pajamas and my pink wig.
Sure.
And
it's so important to it's very fulfilling, I think. Because I've worked in the volunteer capacity under many occasions, and I think it's very fulfilling to volunteer for something that is so, so significant. And every organization, such as Susan G. Komen, needs volunteers.
We do need volunteers.
Organization really does not function without volunteers.
Sure.
It takes over 700 volunteers on race weekend just to make that happen.
Right.
I mean, and then we have volunteers that go out and do education and outreach. You know, I mean, we really could not do the work that we do without volunteers.
I always encourage everyone I know. You know, I worked in nonprofits for 100 years, and I founded a nonprofit. And so I know how important volunteering is and how fulfilling volunteering is.
It is.
You know, and I always encourage everyone I know to find something, pick something, whatever it is that means something to you, and just donate some of your time, even if you don't have money, even if you don't have anything but time. Just donate some time, and you feel so rewarded in so many ways. So I can certainly understand you getting involved in that. And let me ask you something. Sarah, how did you come to work for Susan G. Komen?
You know, I actually started out as a volunteer.
Ah, see? I can believe that.
I started volunteering. I lived in Orange County at the time, and I started volunteering with Komen Inland Empire and Komen Orange County. And so I was volunteering for both organizations, and you know, they had a position open up that was just right down my alley. It was everything I went to school for. Women and children's health has always been a passion of mine and a priority for me. It just was a perfect fit.
Well, you know, one of my theme for this show is really women who lead by example, you know, and women who are good role models. And because all women need role models, you know, and it's one of the challenges that we face in our community is that there are not enough women role models. You know, if you can't see it, you can't be it, you know, and we need to see women across the spectrum in all kinds of roles. And so when you see women such as yourselves who are really working for something that you believe in, I find that so inspirational and encouraging for other women to say, you know what, get involved in something. Well, let me ask you this. In regards to Susan G. Coleman or in regards to just fighting breast cancer, what would you encourage women to do to take positive steps for themselves?
Well, I have one, and I want to say be your own advocate.
Okay.
And be your own advocate in all ways of your life. You know, you have to stick up for yourself, and you have to look out for yourself. You look out for your health, look out for your well-being, your spiritual, your physical well-being. Really just taking care of yourself is, I think, a number one priority. If you can't be successful, you can't move forward without advocating for yourself.
And that pretty much applies across the board to most things, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, you have to be an advocate for yourself. You have to find your own voice and not be afraid to use it. And what would you say, Trisha?
Just be aware of your body, aware of your health. Self-exams are really key. Mammograms every year.
And what has been, in the past couple of years for this event, what has been your turnout for that?
Oh, geez. We've raised about $20,000 from the event. Last year we actually sold out. We overbooked.
And we're getting close to selling out again.
Yeah,
yay, to give information on how folks can sign up as well.
We have limited space available, so you know, the event, it's growing every single year. People can register online, and if they can't register online, they can pay at the door.
That's great.
It's limited space available, you know.
Right, of course. Okay.
So, DJ, for more information for the listeners,
yes,
they can go to ComanIE.org. They can register for the sleepover, for the pajama party and fashion show.
Could you say that one more time?
ComanIE.org.
Okay.
They can also call our committee chair, Amy Salzman, at 760-774-8856. She can answer any questions and help get signed up as well for the event. $100 includes everything.
Sounds amazing.
Food and drink as well.
Thank you to Tricia and Sarah for joining me today. I just truly appreciate both of you taking the time to be here and share this important information on our show.
Well, thank you,
thank
DJ.
You.
And if you don't mind, I'd like to just remind our listeners, you know, to know your risk, get screened, know what is normal for you, and make healthy lifestyle choices.
Sounds perfect. Thank you.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you so much.
And this is DJ Cox with California Woman 411. And I have been talking to Tricia and Sarah with the Susan G. Coleman Foundation. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so we will also, in a couple of weeks, we're going to have Dr. Marla Lander from Desert Regional here to talk about it as well. And I just want to wrap up the show with a little bit of women's history. As Gloria Steinem said, women have always been an equal part of the past. We just haven't been a part of history. But this week in women's history, suffragist Victoria Woodhull was born on September 23rd, 1838, and she was actually the first woman candidate for U.S. president in 1872 for the Equal Rights Party. She was a women's rights advocate before the term was even a part of our language. And she spoke loud and often and publicly against the government being comprised only of men. And we should, too. Okay? So get involved, as we've been talking about, in whatever's important to you. Just say yes and get involved. And if you missed last week's show, be sure to check out our website at californiawoman411.com. And we have podcasts up there and here. And again, this is DJ Cox, and this, you're listening to California Woman 411 and on KPTR, 1450 AM. Thank you for joining us today.